You are listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton. Training Matters is brought to you by the Training Institute, dedicated to setting the standard for individuals responsible for training effectiveness in banks and credit unions across the country.
Good day, everyone. I'm Honey Shelton, your host for the show. My career as a banker helped me to discover that my passion is training and professional development. For the past 30 years, I've had the privilege of coaching and providing training to professionals just like you. It's the intention of our show, Training Matters, to help you in your quest to excel on the job. In addition to the show, we have launched the path for bank and credit union trainers to become certified in their profession. The path to certification is a 5-step process, and upon completion, the trainer has earned the designation of Certified Bank Training Professional or Certified Credit Union Training Professional. So if you're expected to create and deliver training, I want you to picture that designation after your name. Picture learning from other training professionals how to master your craft, how to make training stick, how to transfer training to learning. Well, let's get on with the show. We are so glad you joined us for Training Matters and hope you'll come back the second Wednesday of every month for a new episode of Training Matters. You'll want to tune in to hear what experts are saying about key training topics that matter to your bank or credit union. And you'll want others in your company or network to hear the show and share it with others. Here's the link, trainingmatters.thetraininginstitute.com. Today's featured guest is Mary Beth Gard. Mary Beth is an attorney, a co-founder of BankersOnline.com, and the executive manager of BOL Insiders. She's regarded as one of the industry's most respected compliance gurus, and we are excited to have her with us today. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Thanks, honey. I'm excited to be here.
Well, wonderful. What I thought we'd focus on today when we talk about training matters is, with your ear to the wind all the time about what's going on with the regulators and the emphasis of where you think compliance will dominate different areas of the bank or the credit union, I wondered if you'd just share with me what you see financial institutions need to really pay attention to when it comes to training in 2015.
Well, of course, if you're looking at all areas of the bank, I'd say the number one concern is probably information security right now. And you don't have to be an expert to look at the news and realize that banks are under attack. And so the level of sophistication needed is greater than ever before. And it's not just the IT staff that needs to be trained. Many of these exploits are done through social engineering, where the bad guy will figure out some way to con information out of bank employees by pretending to be someone they aren't, pretending to know something they really don't, and it's like putting pieces of a puzzle together. If they start out with one piece of information and then can call somebody in customer service or talk to somebody in the bank and get one other piece of information, those informational pieces are like building blocks that will lay the foundation for them to be able to take over an account or gain access to it. So IT is hot, hot, hot. And then on the lending side, of course, we have the new integrated disclosure rules. Those take effect on August 1 of 2015, and they're a part of a mandate through the Dodd-Frank Act to change the way that we inform consumers about the most important loans that they get. And previously, and by previously, I mean right now and up until August 1 of 2015, you had disclosures under the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act and Reg X, and you had disclosures under the Truth in Lending Act and Reg Z. And often those disclosures were duplicative and very confusing. So the new sheriff in town, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is just sweeping those off the board, and they've started fresh, designing whole new disclosures. And what makes these earth-shattering is that, first of all, they're going to come into play any time you get an application for a consumer loan that would be secured by real estate. That's a major departure from what we have now. What we have now is all about whether you have a dwelling secured loan. In the future, with these new integrated disclosures, it doesn't matter if the real estate has a dwelling on it, if the real estate will ever have a dwelling on it. If it's a real estate loan, you've got to give these integrated disclosures. And they take a holistic approach to setting out the information so that instead of just telling you about settlement cost, which is what the Reg X disclosures have done, or telling you about the terms of the loan itself, which is what the Reg Z disclosures are done, this gives you a universal look at everything involved in the transaction. And right now, when it comes to the current law and regulations and the settlement statement, the law says that the borrower has a right to receive a copy of the settlement statement upon request one business day prior to closing. And I bought a lot of houses, honey, and I can tell you what happens. The borrower calls and says to the title company, "Hey, my loan's scheduled to close tomorrow. I'd like to get a copy of the settlement statement today so I can review it." "Not ready. But I have a right to request it at least one business day prior to closing." I'm telling you, it's not ready. If you want to insist that you get it one business day prior to closing, that's just fine. We'll move the closing. And so, as a practical matter, borrowers have not been able to access that information before they get to the closing table. So one other radical change that these integrated disclosures make is that they require the copy of the closing disclosure to automatically be given to the borrower at least 3 business days prior to closing. No exceptions. So processes are going to be changing. Not only will the financial institution employees have to be trained, but also the outside parties, the title companies, the closing agents, the realtors, everyone who plays a part in that. And, you know, honey, I'd love to hear your view of this. Okay, we've got to keep doing the existing disclosures on those loans up until applications received on or after August 1, 2015. And for applications received before that, you give them the disclosures that we have now for the early disclosures. And when you close the loan, even if it's 2 months after August 1, you're going to use the disclosures that we have under existing law. So it's like a switch gets flipped August 1. Everyone will have to start using the new stuff on the new applications received, but you can't shut off the part of the brain that holds the information about how to do it the old way, because to the extent you have applications in progress, you're going to have to finish them off with the old procedure. So how do you train for something like that?
Well, that sounds complicated, complex, and confusing, which all three of those things are a nightmare when you're training. I'm guessing, and I'm very naive, that's a nicer word than ignorant, about the lending side of things. I'm assuming then that the loan processing applications and vendors who provide those platform services to financial institutions are going to have to adapt the process that's made available
to
the financial institutions. So
major retooling of the loan origination software will be required.
We will be right back to hear more from Mary Beth Gard. Stay tuned.
Are you ready to take a deeper dive into proving your worth as a trainer? Register now for Train the Trainer Bootcamp and take the first step toward becoming a certified bank training professional. Check us out on the web, interaction-training.com, and you'll be on your way to learning how to create and present training that results in learning. Interaction-training.com.
Right off the bat, thinking about some of my clients and some of the trainers that I've trained that have responsibility for training on the loan side, at a minimum, I would be looking at how do I design training that has a kit, so to speak, that teaches the processors, the lenders, and the people involved in conversation with the customer. How do I go through mock training with them, revising a checklist, and to make certain all those dates are going to jive? And I'm assuming, too, that the disclosure is going to say, you know, if you're getting this 3 days in advance and the closing is delayed for any reason, some of these numbers are going to change. Wouldn't that be accurate?
Yes, and there are some types of changes that will require a new disclosure, and others will require a new disclosure, but no new waiting period. So even keeping those rules straight is going to be a struggle. I think if I owned a bank, I'd say, look, we're going to appoint these people as the people who are going to keep their head in the old stuff, so that they will be the ones who will create and carry through with documentation on any loans for which applications were received prior to August 1 that aren't being closed until after August 1, so that they can avoid confusing themselves by trying to have a foot in both worlds, and the people who haven't been so designated will take a flying leap into the new stuff, and that's where their heads will stay. I think that would probably lead to fewer errors.
I was going to say that certainly sounds reasonable. I would think where this becomes an even greater challenge is the smaller bank. This is applicable to any size bank. Is that right, Mary Beth?
Yes, it is. Now, some banks, when they started amending all these consumer real estate regulations, just decided it's too complex. We aren't going to do that anymore. And to them, I've been saying, come on back. It's safe to get into the water. Maybe they want to wait and get back into the water August 1 so they can start fresh with the new procedures, the new disclosures, the new regulations. But yes, it there is no exemption that is based on size.
Well, it would seem to me that the greatest challenge would be limited staffing and having a good plan in place. I'm glad we're talking about this in January, giving the banks a heads up, and I'm sure Bankers Online will have lots of opportunity to get the right people, the right training through your webinar offering. And then don't you have a triage for lending as well? Will that be in place?
Yes, we have a lending compliance triage conference. And, you know, that's one of the things that has to be a challenge within any financial institution is figuring out how much time do we get ready for any particular change that's coming down the pike. For example, right now, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has issued an advance notice of proposed rulemaking regarding prepaid cards. And I think they finally even issued their proposal on that. It's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. And in the old days, when proposals were out, a lot of people would say, wake me up when it's final. I don't care about the proposal. But some of the changes that we've seen over the last few years have been so monumental, been necessary to get familiar with the new way of thinking and the new terminology while it's been in the proposed stage in order to be able to get in gear and get up to speed on time when something final is finally coughed up. You don't want to be blindsided. I'll never forget, I had gone out to do some training for bank customers at a local bank. They had asked me if I would teach 2 half-day seminars on how deposit insurance works, and they were particularly interested in revocable trust. And I thought, how fun. This is a different audience, and they advertised all over town. You didn't have to be a customer of that particular institution. So there were high net worth individuals that came from hundreds of miles around, and we spent half a day with one group, half a day with another group, and we explored all the intricacies of deposit insurance, of revocable trust and POD accounts and so forth. And that evening, I felt so good. You know how you feel when you think, I did something good today? Those people went away with a real understanding of this. So the next morning I was back at my desk, and at about 11 o'clock in the morning, I got a press release from the FDIC. And the day before, probably during the very time that I was speaking to these groups, the FDIC on an emergency basis had totally revised the particular rules that I had taught about. And since they were doing it on an emergency basis, boom, the changes became effective immediately. So that was my lesson in being blindsided. I won't ever let that happen again. Not sure how I could have avoided it there, but the point I'm making is peeking ahead and seeing what's in the minds of the regulators that could change your products and your processes when they're talking about it in the proposed rule stage isn't a bad idea.
This interview with Mary Beth Gard is such a perfect example of what Training Matters is going to be bringing to you every month. We'll be right back.
It's not enough to train your workforce. You also have to train the trainer. Now is the time to register for Train the Trainer Bootcamp. Whether you are brand new to the training arena or have clocked many miles in your role as a bank or credit union trainer, you will boost your ability to engage your learners and have attendees praising your training ability. Register now, interaction-training.com.
Well, one of the things I talk about when I'm working with trainers in our Train the Trainer boot camp is to step outside their expertise and tap into sources that are discussing here's what can be coming down the pike, so that that time frame you need to prepare training, especially when it's related to regulatory issues, it's in your mix when you look at your annual training plan. And what you've talked about today, both information security training, I can see how that impacts every single person who could be contacted under the guise of I'm a FBI agent to I'm a proposed customer or a merchant trying to get information to put the pieces together like you were talking about that come with these attacks that banks are now hopefully hyper alert to, as well as this continuous emphasis coming from the CFPB about changes that are complex, confusing, grasp the understanding. Is this something, Mary Beth, that BOL Insider does?
We have a compliance news podcast that we record every week, and it goes beyond the news and includes insight and analysis to help bankers connect the dots, kind of a this happened, now what? Because sometimes you can tell from enforcement actions what's likely to occur in the future. If you think back to 1987, for example, there was a study done about hold times on checks. If someone came into an institution and made a deposit, how long would it be before the funds were available to them? And back then, we didn't have a law or regulation that dealt with that, so banks could set their own policy. And what the study found was that in some instances, there was a three-week delay before the customer could have access to their money. Now, it didn't take a very good crystal ball to realize that, if banks are not regulating themselves adequately in this regard, I'll bet we're going to see legislation. And, of course, we did, the Expedited Funds Availability Act and then the dreaded Reg CC to implement it. So that's what we do in these compliance news podcasts, is try to figure out not just in compliance news but news stories themselves, what does this mean? What are the implications for the industry? What does it mean about what your training should be? And I'll give you a quick example. There was recently an investigation conducted by ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, along with Homeland Security, that resulted in 14 guilty pleas, 4 people who are still on the lam, and then one guy who was just convicted. And what they had done was go in and open accounts at financial institutions using fake IDs and fake passports. And the way they got the bank employees to not look very close at those things, they set up corporations. So the accounts weren't being set up in the names of the individuals. They were being set up in the names of the corporations. And those corporations had been filed with the state authorities, so they had their certificate of incorporation and so forth. Then they would have a dummied up resolution appointing Fred and Amy as, let's say, as the authorized signer. Well, fine. two individuals had bogus identification documents that made it appear they were Fred and Amy. So they got into the bank that way, and they made legitimate deposits for a while in order to lull the banks into a sense of false security. Then they establish borrowing relationships. And what happens is, over on the lending side, the lending people look and they think, oh yeah, these borrowers are deposit account customers at our institution, so they've already been subjected to our customer identification program. We don't need to worry about that. So the next level of scrutiny that could have been applied wasn't, and the end result was 15 banks were ensnared in the fraud and lost millions and millions of dollars. So you read something like that in the news, or you hear about it on Insiders, and what we say is, it's time to trot that out as an example for the folks on the front line who are administering your customer identification program, and perhaps just thinking of it as being like a checklist requirement where they're thinking, oh yeah, got to ask for ID, check, looked at the ID, and they've looked at it for a nanosecond, and they haven't stuck it under a UV light to look at the security features. They haven't compared it to what's in the ID checking guide, and so they've let the bad guys into the bank. So do a postmortem and ask, could this have happened at our institution? Could somebody have walked in, like one of these guys was using a counterfeit Pakistani passport? If somebody who is the authorized signer on an account has as his only piece of identification a Pakistani passport, would that send up red flags? Would it cause you to look a little closer at the entity that's opening the account? Things like that. So we try to take the news and then show how it hits you where you live.
Well, and that would certainly do it. No doubt about it. And you're right. I mean, one of the things that I think makes financial institutions such a target is the high desire to accommodate the request of people who come in to do business with them, and the art and science of learning that, yes, your spirit of accommodation needs to be consistent, but your process for scrutiny must be intense. Just like what you were saying, where will the red flag go up? So it sounds like listening to that podcast would not only keep compliance well informed, but it would be helpful for trainers as well.
Oh, definitely, because we dig out examples that they wouldn't necessarily run across, and we have something called an insider show where we get several of our insider gurus on, and we just discuss some of these issues. And it's nice because we all come from different backgrounds, so we have different perspectives on the same issue. And of course, I can't help but look at things through the filter of a lawyer and think about, okay, what kind of liability could the bank incur if it does a particular thing or fails to do a particular thing? We had an object lesson a week or so ago. FinCEN is going after a chief compliance officer at a bank to impose a $1 million civil money penalty against that individual personally, an attempt to bar him from ever participating in the affairs of an insured financial institution. And it's a great illustration of what you just referred to earlier, that natural tension between, oh, we want to be of service, we want to make our products available to the widest range of people. We don't want to put barriers in the way that could prevent them from having access. But in this particular case, the individual who was the chief compliance officer of MoneyGram International allegedly allowed marketing to run roughshod over him, and he failed to put into place policies that would have shut down some of their satellite offices when the incidents of fraud, either percentage-wise or dollar amount, were extreme. And so FinCEN said, you didn't do your job. We're going to hold you personally liable.
Well, that'll strike a chord for all of us because, again, in training, like you've always done, I know, and I do too, when it's a valid point, talking about consequences if you're in violation of some of these regulations, whether that's, you know, criminal prosecution or monetary penalties, and that is a very significant example of what can happen.
Perhaps the two most effective strategies for training are to focus on consequences and also to have those listening put the shoe on the other foot. So if you're teaching about error resolution on unauthorized debit card use, imagine it's you. And you've looked at your bank account, you thought you had a good balance, and all of a sudden there's almost nothing in there, and you see that it's because of transactions that you didn't make. How would you want the financial institution to respond to that, not just in terms of adherence to the regulation, but in terms of what they say to you? And then the lawyer in me interjects, yes, but be sympathetic, but non-committal. Don't say, oh, of course we'll recredit your account, because what you might find is, no, his roommate is a member of the former Felons of America. He knew it, and he had given the guy his card and his PIN, and that's how this happened. So you want to know all the facts before you draw any conclusions.
Yes, it's a little bit of a tightrope walk, I think, and more so than ever before. Well, these illustrations are great, Mary Beth. I can't thank you enough for being on our show today and informing our audience that shares the same concerns that you're so dedicated to.
Well, thanks so much, honey.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton.